Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Maple Leaf Foods 2014 fourth quarter results conference call hosted by Mr. Michael McCain. Please be advised that this call is being recorded. Please note that there will be a question-answer session following the formal remarks, and the question-answer session instructions will be read after the presentation. I will now turn the meeting over to Mr. Michael McCain. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. On today's webcast, we will discuss Maple Leaf Foods' financial and operating results for the fourth quarter of 2014. The news release and today's webcast presentation are available at mapleleaffoods.com under the investor section. As you know, some of the statements made in this call may constitute forward-looking information, and future results may differ materially from what we discuss. Please refer to our 2014 MD&A and other information on our website for a broader description of operations and risk factors that could affect the company's performance. I will begin today with an operating review, and then I'll turn over the call to Debbie Simpson, our Chief Financial Officer, to provide other financial information. We'll then open up the phone lines for your questions. If I could, please turn your attention to page 2 of the presentation. The fourth quarter capped off what can best be described as a pivotal year for Maple Leaf. We're heading into 2015 with very positive momentum. We made a significant improvement in adjusted operating earnings versus 2013. All our business units had improved results in the fourth quarter compared to the prior year. We recovered our margins through what can only be described as a very volatile period of raw material inflation. And in fact, we structurally achieved our strategic gross margin levels in the business in the fourth quarter. While the pricing action we took in May led to a demand response which continues to impact our volume, we are encouraged and confident that our targeted and measured response is the right approach to that. We advanced our supply chain conversion, and the finish line is clearly in sight. We closed a small plant in the fourth quarter and will cease production at our largest legacy facility tomorrow. This is a very, very significant milestone for us. As we near completion of this strategic supply chain transition, we are on track to deliver a 10% EBITDA margin run rate in 2015. Finally, we increased our quarterly dividend in this period, which represents the first step in a purposeful, broader capital allocation strategy and reflects our confidence in the outcome of our strategies. Turning your attention to slide number 3, please. Slide 3 shows the progression towards our EBITDA margin target. While our results continue to reflect the cost of change, we delivered a very significant improvement in our adjusted operating earnings, with a loss of $14 million compared to last year of over $56 million in the fourth quarter. Adjusted EPS was a loss of 8 cents compared to last year, negative 41 cents per share. Adjusted EBITDA margin for the quarter was 1.5%. This represents an improvement from our low water mark a year ago as we progress towards our 10% EBITDA margin target. Let's turn to slide 4. Where we provide a breakout of the material factors that contributed to the $42 million year-over-year improvement in our adjusted operating earnings in the fourth quarter. The first bar illustrates the $27 million improvement in protein market conditions. Most of this is attributable to our hog production operations, which benefited from a combination of higher hog prices and lower grain costs. Poultry markets were also favorable in a quarter-over-quarter basis. Pork markets were not materially different from the prior year and were consistent with the 5-year average. We expanded our prepared meats margin by $21 million over a year ago, which is shown in the next bar, a very strong accomplishment. Also important to note that this is lapping a quarter in 2013 where we were essentially absorbing raw material cost increases. In Q4, we have brought our gross margins in line with our strategic targets. As anticipated, the price increases in prepared meats has impacted demand and resulted in short-term volume decline with a year-over-year impact of $13 million. I will provide some more color on this shortly. Next is a $9 million year-over-year increase in the transition costs, primarily due to the higher commissioning costs of our new Heritage facility, the largest in our prepared meats network. Finally, the other bar totaling $15 million represents a number of items, including a significant year-over-year reduction in SG&A relating to the timing of spend. On slide number five, I want to provide some additional commentary on our prepared meats volume. Last year was a very volatile period of raw material inflation, as you all know, which we managed through responsible and necessary pricing. This pricing action led to some volume contraction, which has continued to negatively impact results in the fourth quarter. We strongly believe that the response to this is simply time and patience, and that's appropriate for the following reasons. First, this was one of the most significant pricing actions ever in our history. Second, most of the volume impacts have been very category specific, and by that we mean categories like bacon and ham, which are more price sensitive. Third, the impact was mostly a brand private label share change, which we believe will normalize. And finally, and certainly most importantly, the long-term fundamentals are now moving in our direction for both currency and commodities. Adding to our confidence, we are seeing early indicators of improved performance in prepared meats volumes in the first quarter of 2015, which gives us some confidence that that path of time and patience is the right one. On slide number six, we've updated the path to our margin target. The largest contributor, which represents over half of the improvement at 6 percentage points, or roughly $180 million annualized increase in the operating earnings, is the completion of the network transition. This has two components. The first is elimination of transition costs, primarily duplicate overhead and startup costs at the new Heritage facility. The balance will come from realizing the full benefits of our new streamlined low-cost manufacturing network. In essence, this is the delta between full added cost and contributing benefits from the capital spend. This bar represents a larger amount in Q4, slightly larger than it did in Q3, by 0.6 percentage points to be precise, because the cost tied to commissioning our Heritage facility exceeded the pace at which we could shed costs in our legacy plants, and the startup costs at Heritage were significant. Over the last few quarters, we've incurred indirect costs in our legacy facilities, which represents 1% of this bridge, or approximately $30 million of operating earnings on an annualized basis. The third bar represents volume. This is worth 2.9% of EBITDA margin, or approximately $90 million annualized, which I previously discussed. The other component consists of a number of smaller items. The most significant is that we assumed in the 10% EBITDA margin target that our hog production business would break even, while in the fourth quarter it has outperformed that assumption. The balance of this bar is primarily related to timing of SG&A spending. In summary, although I can't provide exact and precise timing, we continue to be confident that we will reach our target in 2015 inside the time ranges that we've previously described. Turning now to slide seven and an update on our prepared meats network transition, we made considerable progress throughout 2014 with the closure of three manufacturing facilities, including a smaller legacy plant in Winnipeg at the end of December. Tomorrow is a very meaningful milestone. We'll mark the significant closing of the largest of our legacy facilities, the former Schneider's plant in Kitchener, Ontario. This was the largest facility in our legacy network. We have one last plant to close located in Toronto. It is difficult to estimate the exact closure date because it is predicated on a clear line of sight to production readiness at the Heritage facility, but we've not changed our perspective on prior timelines as we've discussed. At the same time, we are continuing to optimize those plants where we've made large investments. This optimization phase is already substantially complete for two of the three expanded facilities located in Winnipeg and Brampton. The optimization of the cooked sausage plant in Saskatoon continues. The production ramp-up at the Heritage facility is going quite well. Transfer of all wiener SKUs has been completed, and the focus of this line is on optimization. For the sliced meats line, the SKU transfer is progressing. The completion of the SKU transfers will trigger the closure of the final facility in Toronto, and after that, the optimization phase for the deli meats line will begin and continue throughout the next quarter or two. To summarize, in 2015, the duplicate overhead costs will be ending, with optimization costs mostly significant at Heritage that will continue throughout a portion of 2015. Turning to slide number 8, the breakout costs related to our network transition are shown in this slide. Transition costs were $24 million in the quarter, consistent with the prior quarter. These largely represent startup costs at our Heritage facility, along with increased overhead costs related to running duplicate facilities throughout the transition. Total transition costs for 2014 were $97 million. There are three drivers of these transition costs. The first is commissioning costs, which primarily relate to the Heritage facility and will continue for the duration of that commissioning period. Duplicate overhead is the second, and it is expected to decrease starting in March in conjunction with the closing of our Kitchener plant. The third and smallest bucket of transition costs is the dedicated resources that are executing this transition, with these costs going away when we complete the final moves. I'll now turn the call over to our CFO, Debbie Simpson, who will give you a financial perspective. Debbie?
Thank you, Michael. If you could turn to slide 9, I will now discuss capital allocation and our financial position. Earlier today, the Board of Directors voted to increase the regular quarterly dividend to 8 cents a share from 4 cents. This will increase our dividend yield to approximately 1.5%, positioning us in the lower end of the range of our CPG food peer group. This follows the completion of our strategic capital investments in our prepared meat supply chain and is the first step in a broader capital allocation strategy. Capital allocation will continue to be a focus for the board in 2015. We will carefully review the appropriate leverage structure for the company and potential opportunities for what responsible capital deployment on acquisitions and in the business might be. At the end of 2014, there were $496 million in cash on the balance sheet, a reduction of $14 million from Q3. The largest factors contributing to this change were cash provided by operating activities during the fourth quarter of $16 million, and capital expenditure in the fourth quarter was $35 million compared to $88 million in the prior year. Turning to slide 10, annual capital expenditure for 2014 on continuing operations were $216 million, which was in line with our forecast. The capital spending for the prepared meats transformation is now substantially complete and largely in line with our initial estimate to complete this program. There remains some additional planned spend in 2015. However, we believe that this will be offset by some capital inflows of roughly the same amount. Total capital expenditures for the transformation period 2010 to 2014 were within 5% of our original plan. The capital spending program for 2015 is estimated to be $120 million, which includes maintenance capital spending as well as some profit improvement projects. Moving to slide 11, in the fourth quarter, the company recorded $11 million in restructuring costs, of which approximately $7 million related to the future cash costs and $4 million to non-cash costs such as accelerated depreciation. Total restructuring costs for 2014 were $67 million compared to $75 million in 2013. The 2014 number included $37 million of restructuring charges related to the Prepared Meats Network transition. This was primarily employee retention, severance costs, and accelerated depreciation for the two facilities that are closing this year. In addition, there were $30 million in severance costs related to the reorganization of our SG&A structure following the sale of the bakery business. For 2015, we estimate that restructuring costs will be approximately $13 million, of which $9 million will be cash costs. This lower level reflects the near completion of our transformation initiatives and does not include potential restructuring charges for projects that are not underway. Thanks, and I'll now return the call back to Michael.
Thank you, Debbie. I'd like to turn your attention momentarily to slide number 12, because there are a number of broader economic factors that we believe are setting us up well for 2015 and beyond and influence our macro environment. First, over the medium to long term, a devaluation of the Canadian dollar is a very positive development for Maple Leaf as it improves our relative competitiveness versus the U.S. This impacts us domestically and in our export markets. I would caution you, however, that this positive impact does take a little time to materialize because in the short term our cash flows are relatively balanced. The second favorable economic trend is lower energy costs, and obviously that impacts our cost structure. Finally, both grain prices and hog prices are moving lower, and the futures market suggests that they will remain there for a while. That too benefits our business in the near term. The combination of these factors, we believe, provides a potential tailwind for us coming into the balance of 2015 and beyond. Let me wrap up on slide number 13. In the fourth quarter of 2014, it's very important for us to point out that we had solid improvement in our earnings. We're very satisfied with that, and we're entering 2015 with what we believe is very positive momentum. We began this journey to transform our prepared meats supply chain in 2010, and now the finish line is in sight as we enter this final phase of operational optimization. The heavy lifting for capital spending and all of the restructuring costs that go with that is substantially complete. We've structurally improved our margins in prepared meats businesses, and the majority of our business, and we're carefully managing our volume recovery. There are a number of macroeconomic factors that we think are setting us up well, things like the lower Canadian dollar, lower energy costs, more favorable commodity environments. We continue to feel that we're on a very clear path to deliver our 10% EBITDA margin run rate in 2015. As we enter this period of manufacturing stability, we'll be able to turn our attention to a growth agenda. We're very excited about that, and we intend to pursue our optimal capital allocation strategy through that period. I'd now like to turn over the call to your questions. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now take questions from the telephone lines. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before making your selection. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. You may at all times cancel your question by pressing the pound sign. Please press star 1 at this time. If you have a question, there will be a brief pause allowing you to register. Our first question is from Irene Nattel from RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thanks, and good afternoon, everyone. Michael, as you get ready to shut down the Kitchener facility, can you just walk us through sort of how you would expect the production flow and the improvement in earnings to kind of come through on the income statement in coming months?
Well, there's a number of components that go with that, Irene. First of all, hello, and I hope you're having a good day.
Thank you. You too.
There are a number of components of that. The first is the relatively immediate impact of the eliminate, or immediate. I say immediate. There is a short period of time of decommissioning in these overhead structures, but you know, relatively quick decline in the overhead costs and the attendant wage and salary costs that go with the Cortland facility. This is a major milestone in the sense that this plant is well over 100 years of age, is a big component of the community in Kitchener, and they've done an extraordinary job throughout a difficult transition. So it is a significant and historic milestone for us. The first financial implication of that will be, as I said, the decline in the overhead costs attached to that. We then get, which we've been getting and progressing towards, every time we move a kilo of production from Cortland into the new facility, there's a reduced standard cost in the new facility, so there's a costing benefit attached to that. And then finally, and most importantly, we are only 6 months into the startup phase of the Delhi Bolo component, and we will realize the benefit of optimization of those lines to improve, obviously, labor productivity and yields towards what we expected in our business case, and our track record is pretty good on that. It does take a little bit of time, not excessive, but does take some time. So it's a progression of those components, and then, the only remaining ingredient then is to finish the SKU moves from the Barter Road facility and go through the same components of Barter Road, which is imminent, and then we get into the final optimization of the Heritage. How all that translates in terms of progression, Irene? I mean, we've historically been described these commitments in the bandwidth of a window, and that window has said that we would achieve these run rates sometime in 2015. More specifically, I've narrowed that down many times from anywhere from the first to the third quarter, I think is probably a more accurate reflection of that, and I still believe that's exactly where we'll be. So between now and the end of the third quarter, I think you'll see steady progression of those building blocks unfold to achieve that target.
And that's really helpful, Michael. So that's really what I want. So we should see it sort of upward movement in the profitability as we get into Q2, Q3. Okay, perfect.
Absolutely.
That's great.
Absolutely.
And then just, if I may, the growth agenda. Obviously the last 7 years have been all about right-sizing the existing footprint, but as you're starting to turn your attention forward, can you just sort of update us on your thoughts around geographies, product lines, size, what you would like to do?
So we are actively working on that, Irene. I don't have anything today that I would feel comfortable at discussing at any length other than what I've discussed to date, and those are things like our Italian meats strategies as a potential option, although it's a smaller one. The poultry strategy is one that we're investigating. There's obviously no decisions. Those are a couple of examples. We have several others that we're considering. It's absolutely essential for us to be purposeful, analytic, deliberate about designing a vibrant growth strategy. That's our nature to be that way, and we're in the middle of that process of defining a very purposeful growth strategy that will carry us through the next five or more years. So I can't really give you any insights. Certainly don't want to give away any competitive components of that growth strategy as well, suffice to say, it's actively on our agenda now for investigation, and we're working hard towards that.
That's great. And then just finally, Michael, again, just thinking from our perspective, how we should think through this. Presumably, the decision about the growth agenda is sort of intrinsically enmeshed with the decision around capital allocation and potential return of capital, magnitude of return of capital to shareholders. So should we be kind of expecting that you will come back to us with both of those elements at the same time?
I think iteratively. I would not look for you know, a big bang conclusion here. I think we are going to have a very purposeful, deliberate capital allocation strategy inside the Maple Leaf organization. You know, it will be very shareholder centric, and by that I mean we will find our desire and the board's desire, my desire, the management team's approach will be to be very purposeful in the balance between the deployment of capital and the distribution of capital, and having appropriate models to determine what is optimal for the shareholders. By that I mean a growth strategy that deploys capital has to be very, you know, obviously very focused on the adequate risk-adjusted returns to shareholders in a tangible way that that we feel very comfortable with. And obviously, you know, defining that growth agenda is the first thing on our is important to us, and it informs what our capital allocation strategy should be. To the extent that we don't have opportunities to invest in a growth strategy that meets those conditions, then we would distribute capital and distribute it in a way that we've described in very articulately in the past, and that hasn't changed. I also think that will be purposeful. We announced one component of that today, the adjustment in our annual or quarterly dividend, which is purposed to reflect the fact that Maple Leaf is a packaged goods company, and the share price has moved meaningfully, and we need to reflect that in an appropriate dividend yield. And so that's a well-purposed component of a good capital allocation strategy on the distribution side of the equation. So that, you know, this is a dynamic relationship between deployment opportunities and distribution opportunities, and you know, we're going to evolve that way. It's not going to be one specific outcome, Irene.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question is from Michael Van Aelst from TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, and good afternoon. I'd like to focus first on the volumes, and you suggested that early indications in Q1 are that you're seeing signs of a recovery in volumes. I was hoping you could give us some color as to what might be driving that. Is that just the market getting more accustomed to the higher prices, or are you taking advantage of the lower hog costs and starting to promote more or lower prices?
It's a combination of all of those things, Michael. I mean, at the end of the day, when you're facing a situation like this, a very tactical response is usually not one thing. It's a collection of many dozens of things, and they all have certain themes to them. Certainly, in certain segments, we're seeing the ability to tactically respond because of, you know, just the declining market conditions, which help us do that and maintain our margins. So we accomplish both. But equally, we're also seeing, with the passage of time, some additional assimilation with new price points and the habitualization of new price points. So that's a part of it. You start to see migration back to brand features and merchandising events versus private label. Start to see, you know, the impact of just longer time periods when those price points have been in the marketplace and consumers habitualize around those. So it's a combination of all of those. We did have a number of where we had to adjust our merchandising basically to suit the new environment and the new pricing environment. We had to adjust our merchandising in certain retail channels. So, you know, it's a combination of literally dozens of tactical responses, but it did warrant time and patience. Obviously, we were disappointed in Q4's volume outcomes, but it still warranted time and patience, and I think that's being rewarded as we move into 2015.
So when we look at that 290 basis points of margin improvement that's going to come from volume recovery, what's the magnitude of the volume growth that you need to see from the current run rate? Whether you talk about market share growth or volume growth, what kind of magnitude are we talking about?
That's mid-single digits.
So like a 5% growth in volumes can get you almost a 300 basis point improvement in margins?
Can be, yep. In that five to 8% range, yep.
Okay, and just finally, when you look at your CapEx for the year, you're talking about $120 million. I think your maintenance was something in the $80 million range or so. So the incremental that you attribute to profit improvement programs, is that does that kind of go along the same lines as your comments from the previous quarter where you said 10% margin is a floor, not a ceiling, and,
yes.
And I guess this kind of a capital program would help you
yes.
get above that?
Yes. So, there's in this industry, there's always opportunities to find profitable growth through investing in the business in a relatively small and tactical way. But we expect over the next 5 years to grow our margins, not contract them. We don't see 10% as a steady state.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The following question is from Ken Zaslow from BMO. Please go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone.
Hi, Ken.
So just a couple questions. One is the 6% network transition incremental, how much of the $97 million is going to go away in 2015? I didn't fully understand that.
I gotta calibrate the $97 million as a component of the 6%. The 6% is a bigger number than the 97. So, the six percent on an annualized basis, Ken, is about $180 million, not 97.
Right. So that's what I was getting at. Is okay. So how do you get to that 6%? If all the transition costs go away. And what's the incremental over that to get to the 6%? I thought it was just everything going away.
No, because in the transition costs of $97 million, which was basically $24 million in the quarter times four, those are things like duplicate overhead, incremental resources to support that transition, commissioning costs. That does not include the benefits attached to the capital.
Okay, I see.
So the delta between the two is a combination of those excess costs plus the benefits attached to moving the volume to a lower cost facility.
Okay, and then the degree of certainty of this, can you talk, I don't know how to say this. For the last 2 years, you have not achieved expectations on a consensus basis since 2012. So I'm trying to figure out what gives you, is there a level of confidence that you have that we will start to see this $97 million plus this additional benefit go and make that transition? What type of confidence do you have in that? And how does that differ than the last 2 years where maybe you didn't hit the expectation that maybe you thought you might hit?
So we've always been, Ken, and you raise a very good point. We have consistently had high levels of confidence in the end state while simultaneously having an incredible lack of confidence on our ability to predict the milestones in between. The volatility and unpredictability of transition is shall we say, acute.
Yep.
So, our inability or ability or inability to gauge quarter-to-quarter progress or performance in a state of instability and transition frankly, not only doesn't surprise me, it doesn't concern me.
Okay.
What is most important to me is what confidence do we have in the end state when all of these startup and transitional costs and volume volatilities all of the myriad dozens and dozens and dozens of issues that crop up and occur, some planned, some unexpected, in the process of transition when those are over. And so I have said consistently, I have high levels of confidence in the end state. I don't necessarily have confidence in the interim milestones of financial results along the way, or necessarily the timing inside this, you know, 9-month kind of window that we've described in many times in the past. So your point's a good one. I don't think that you should draw a straight line between confidence of the milestones and the interim instability to confidence of the end state.
Okay. With the reduction of the pork complex.
With the what, please?
With the pork complex.
Yes.
Anywhere, you know, all the input costs that you have, they have obviously, you know, gone down by material amounts. Why does that not accelerate your ability to hit the 10%, or is it required for you to hit the 10%? Because given that the conditions have changed so markedly over the last 1 to 2 quarters, I would think that there needed to be an adjustment, either timing or something to it. And there was nothing of a comment just about that. It's been a market change.
It is a market change, but there's one of the while the commodity's gone down, Ken, there's an incredibly complex set of calculus here when you overlay the impact of the Canadian dollar. So to a processor in Canada who's simply buying raw materials, the commodity's gone down, but the currency going has offset that materially, causing the commodity values in Canadian dollars to Canadians to actually go up. Right. So having said, that's why, as I said in my remarks, the short-term cash flow here is relatively stable in terms of its impact of the Canadian dollar short-term. With the passage of a little time, you say, well, how much time? It can depend on market conditions and how this unfolds inside the market. It could be, you know, 6, 9 months, maybe even a year or two before this unfolds. But a lower Canadian dollar does have a very substantial positive impact on our business with the passage of time. But in the short term, it does offset the decline in the commodity markets relative to our raw material costs in our packaged meats business.
Okay. My final question is, when do you suspect that you will be profitable on an operating profit level in 2015? Is it as soon as 1Q, or will we see that second, third, and fourth quarter? Like, how do you think? Because, you know, your meat product actually went down sequentially, and I understand the agribusiness went up, but it was probably more because of hog prices. Will we actually see profits in the first and second quarter, or are they still going to be at a run rate of negative?
So we've not done forward-looking earnings, Ken. So I don't plan to begin that practice. As I said, I think what we've been very consistent on is that I believe that we will achieve our 10% run rate in 2015. I believe that more specifically, we expect that to be sometime between the first and the third quarter. And I believe we're going to make continuous, steady progress towards that goal between now and the run rate.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Derek DeLay from Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Derek.
Just had a question. Just to be clear, on the $120 million capital spend, the $40 million incremental that's strategic capital or schedule for profitability improvement, that's not included in your current 10% EBITDA margin target?
No.
Okay, great. And just moving on to the ramp-up at Heritage, you know, in the past, I believe you said that, you know, you weren't willing to turn off your legacy facilities until you were comfortable that Heritage is operating consistently at a peak load basis. So is it fair to say with, you know, the closure of Cortland Avenue tomorrow that you're at that level at Heritage?
No. It's fair to say that we're substantially better than what we were and enough along that curve where we could close our very largest facility in the network, which happens to be the Cortland plant. We have one more yet to go. So I think for us to demonstrate peak load is when you cut the final cord of that last facility. But honestly, it's, you know, we're making significant progress because now we're shedding the overhead and realizing the benefits attached with our largest facility, the Cortland facility. It was the largest in our legacy network, Derek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Understood. Okay, no,
That condition of peak load requirement is not something you'd make until you burn the final bridge.
Okay, I understood. But the Barter Road facility is a lot smaller than
it
Cortland
is.
Have. Okay.
It is.
Great. Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Mark Petrie from CIBC. Please go ahead.
Just a couple questions. With the health in the hog production side of the business, how does that impact, if at all, your view on the presence in that segment and your vertical integration and the amount of investment that you have in hog production?
I'm not sure I understand your question really well.
To clarify, you guys have sort of changed at different points the amount of your total hog needs that you've produced internally.
Yes.
And so I guess I'm just trying to understand, you know, the extent to which a healthy hog production industry could mean that that level would change.
The fact that it's healthier today than it was when we acquired those assets, I think, is good news. We didn't have a strong desire to invest more assets in that segment of the value chain, but we did. Clearly, in retrospect, we did that at a time when it was opportunistic. And the health of the hog production sector today is considerably better than what it was then. That's the good news. In terms of whether or not it would impact our desire to change that percentage today, I think probably not. We have that position today. We're realizing reasonably satisfactory returns in that segment of the value chain at this moment. You know, I felt that if we had an opportunity to divest those assets, but maintain long-term relationships of supply, because we're in that link in the value chain because we need the supply for our brand and facility, then that's certainly something I would consider. But the prospects are very low for that to occur, so I honestly don't think we should anticipate any material change in that for the foreseeable future.
Okay, that's helpful. You spoke about some timing impacts in SG&A. Can you just clarify how substantial that was and how we should think about run rate SG&A either as a dollar amount or as a percentage of revenue?
The Q4 timing was really related to year over year. We had some expenses in the prior year that we recorded in Q3 and in this year recorded in Q4. So it's a mismatch, and they were actually pickups as opposed to expenses. So it was a mismatch of timing from one year to another. That would not be the norm, right? So you wouldn't expect to see that upside going forward. It really just is a shift in timing between Q3 and Q4 in both years.
So on a run rate basis?
Well, on a run rate basis, I think if you took the annual number for 2014, if you annualize the back half of 2014, I think you'd probably be pretty close to the mark.
Okay, that's helpful. And then just lastly, in terms of the dividend and coming to the 8 cents a share per quarter, how did you come to that level? I think you kind of said there was a yield that you wanted to hit, but was there more to it? And obviously, you know, I assume we'll get more clarity on a policy and an actual policy going forward when you clarify the capital return of capital plans. But how did you get to the 8 cents?
We arrived at the 8 cents basically. Our peer companies in CPG world, packaged goods and the food industry, would have a range anywhere from 1.5% to 3% on a dividend yield basis. This puts us at the low end of that range. We thought it was appropriate at this juncture to make a step forward in our both capital allocation and in return of capital to shareholders, but do it in a responsible way to get to a level that's both sustainable and a level where we feel we can very purposefully grow that dividend over time. And so we just basically picked it at that level. We think that's the responsible thing to do at this moment. It reflects the fact that we're coming into 2015 with what we think is tremendous momentum. It reflects the fact that where 6 and 9 months ago we had tremendous lack of clarity and instability, where we now have some pretty good visibility and confidence. So it kind of reflects that confidence. We think that at this level, while it's at the low end of that CPG range, it's at a sustainable level and one that I think we can grow it from here. So, putting all those factors together, this is the level that we chose.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you have a question, please press star 1. Our next question is from Irene Tarkov from Lightspeed Partners. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Wanted to see if you can comment on sort of what volumes you are going to be delivering to Kroger and when we should see them in the numbers and sort of what are the sort of the growth potential there.
Well, certainly we've never really been in a position to comment on individual customer relationships, Irene, so I hope you can respect that. But we do... We do think, particularly with the lower Canadian dollar, that there's tremendous opportunities for us to both repatriate volume in the Canadian marketplace that has been subjected to competitive pressure from the U.S. over the last 6 or 8 years, but also export into the U.S. in specific niches and where we have available capacity. The only caveat to that is business development cycle. These things are not on-off switches. I wish they were, but there can be relatively, no matter what the economic circumstances are, there can be some rather lengthy business development cycle in relationships with individual customers and channels and brands and so on and so forth. And we're working that very hard as we speak.
So do you think it's going to be in 2015 that your products will end up on the shelves in the U.S. or no?
Our products are already in the U.S. on the shelf. So we do sell into a number of different markets today in the U.S. So that's an easy answer is yes. The question is how much growth that drives. We're pretty confident that the volume gap that has existed so far since we raised our pricing, we think that these fundamentals will be a significant contributor to closing that gap.
And then my second question is, in terms of this gross CapEx of $40 million that you're estimating for 15, what exact projects are you targeting with that? Because it's we thought that the growth CapEx stage was over. We were going on 80 maintenance. So what exactly are you going to spend $40 million on?
Well, there's a number. There are a number, and there always will be, initiatives that are profit enhancing throughout the company, Irene. We've in this particular case, we've got a number of a very lucrative capital's investments in our Brandon facility that we're pretty excited about. We expect that to improve our profitability going forward. While I do believe, as I've said in the past, that 10% EBITDA margins, that is our strategic objective for 2015, going forward, we see that as a floor, not a ceiling. But I don't believe that, you know, migrating our capital beyond 10% is going to be completely capital-free. You know, there will be profit-enhancing capital along the way, over and above the maintenance capital numbers that we've articulated in the past. I believe that we've been pretty clear that there would be strategic projects. Certainly, this, you know, when you're dealing with a collection of projects at the magnitude of $40 million, which is relatively small, I don't believe that there's any one common theme other than opportunities like I described at the Brandon facility. That would be the largest, but there's probably several dozen inside that collection.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. And we have no further questions registered. I'd like to turn the meeting back over to Mr. McCain. Please go ahead, sir.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your support and interest in this transition. We are coming to the close. We have very solid momentum in our earnings, and we're moving into 2015, I think, with a very high level of confidence and very much looking forward to getting through the finish line here. So thank you very much for your attention. We'll look forward to updating you in the next quarter. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. The conference call has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time. Thank you for your participation.